listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents Vulnerability and Power. The sermon by the Reverend Jean Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, November 11th, 2018.
I had a long, clever, well, I thought it was clever, introduction to the sermon written and planned. But late last night, my younger son texted me and said, "Mom, can you do breath prayer for me? I'm just really sad and anxious." There was a suicide at his college this week. The rest of Jacob's particular worries are his own, and they're his story. But the whole Denison University community is sad and anxious. And so are many of us. There has been another mass shooting. There are wildfires going crazy in California. There are wars and rumors of wars. And wars are military fight, but which we almost never mention or discuss. My clever intro seems silly to me now. So let me just say that today, this morning, I want to talk about vulnerability and courage and something the Hebrews call chesed, or steadfast love, mercy and loving kindness in one word. Our New Testament reading ends with the story of the poor widow woman who was so faithful that she gave her very last coins, 2 lepta, the smallest coins in circulation in the whole of the Roman Empire. Not a grand gift, but everything she had. And Jesus points her out to his disciples and says, "Truly I tell you, this one has put in more than everyone else. They've contributed out of their abundance, she out of her poverty." That might be a pretty compelling sermon about giving and stewardship, about giving like a poor widow, sacrificially, rather than like those rich folks who gave out of what they could easily spare. They gave gifts that cost them nothing. You, Jesus seems to be saying, you give sacrificially. And that does seem to square with a lot of what Jesus has been talking about in the Gospel of Mark. He invites his hearers to be more than students, but to be followers and doers, to sacrifice for the sake of the gospel. But that reading leaves out the whole first half of the story. What happened just before Jesus noticed the woman and pointed her out? The first thing Jesus says to his disciples is, "Beware the temple scribes, the ones that prance about in their fancy robes and like to be greeted with honorifics and given the best places. Beware, they devour the widows' households." Some historians suggest that the scribes who were responsible for keeping the records in the temple, the records of the temple treasury, the records of the texts of the people, were also responsible for managing the affairs of widows. In that ancient world, most widows who had no adult sons or immediate male family members were extremely vulnerable. The scribes would step in and take charge of whatever estate their husbands had left for them. They would charge a fee for their services, as any good money manager does, but they would also skim off the top, and they would, in fact, devour the households of the widows. It's quite possible that Jesus points the widow out not to tell us to give everything we have to live on, because she gave so much as part of a system that took so much from her. Jesus seems to be indicting the whole system that left the poor with nothing to live on, and the rich prancing around in long robes and claiming places of honor for themselves. Instead of holding up the poor widow as virtuous by comparing her to the wealthy, Jesus might be showing us that both sides of this equation are wrong. Both the extreme poverty of the widow and the wealth of the scribes who devour the widow's houses are examples of a corrupt and broken system. And Jesus did not come to put a bandage on broken systems, but to heal them. He came to call out a whole new system, a whole new way of living, and he called us to participate in it. In the very next scene, which we'll read next week, and I'm not sure why the lectionary creators separated them out, but in the very next scene, Jesus and his disciples leave the temple. And the disciples look up and they say, "Look, teacher, what large stones and large buildings. They sound like children who had not seen it before." And it is true that Herod had gone into a great building campaign and brought in huge stones and made the buildings more and more impressive. But Jesus answered them, "Do you see those great buildings? Not one stone will be left upon another. All of them will be thrown down." He was talking about the building, which around the time of the writing of Mark's gospel was in fact torn down, thrown down by the Romans. But Jesus was also talking about the religious and political system that resulted in the poorest giving all they had so that institutions and the wealthy elite could remain in wealth and comfort. Throughout the Hebrew Bible and in the teachings of Jesus, the devotion of the people to the way of God is measured by how they treated the most vulnerable among them, the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. Whoever has no stake in the economic system, whoever cannot reliably provide for their own needs, how that one is treated is the measure of the community. Alongside this are the teachings about the requirements of the temple. But the temple had fallen under Roman influence and become complicit in a system of taxation and exploitation. The widow gave faithfully. She gave courageously. She made herself vulnerable for the sake of her gift. But the system that took her gift had become corrupted by greed. It isn't just an example for faithful stewardship, but a reminder that we too can get caught up in systems that are dominated by greed. If we take a step back and focus not just on the rich scribes or the poor widow, if we focus on what Jesus is doing in the story, he sees the widow. Among all the people putting money into the temple treasury that day, Jesus notices her. No one else seems to. Whatever it is that he wants his disciples to learn from her, perhaps the very first lesson is to notice her at all. To see her and acknowledge her as a person, to see her being, her plight, and also her offering. Not just what she suffers, but what she gives, what she contributes. She is not, in the end, an object lesson, but a person, easily unseen, even invisible, yet worthy of Jesus's attention and ours. It's so easy to put labels on other people so that we don't have to think about them very much. Poor, needy, less fortunate, economically disadvantaged. These words, when we turn them into nouns instead of adjectives, the poor, the less fortunate, the economically disadvantaged, they become a way to label and dismiss people. Each one carries with it its own story of how it is that someone without money became someone without money. the poor implies poorly fed, poorly dressed, poorly educated, born that way, destined to stay that way. Less fortunate, well, it's all about luck. Some have it, some don't. Nothing to be done about it either way. The economically disadvantaged? Well, now, there's a system, and it's a good system. We just haven't figured out how to make it work for everyone. And perhaps these folks haven't really wanted to find their way into the system. They may be at fault after all. Jesus sees the wealthy donors in their long robes, giving their great big gifts, but he also sees the poor widow, giving everything she can. He sees her. To him, she is real, despite her place on the edge of a system not built to ensure her thriving. Perhaps that is the lesson for us, to see her and all the vulnerable people living at the edges of a system not built to ensure their thriving. Not as categories, but as real people who have real needs and also real contributions to make to the world, and to see the courage with which they continue to give. Our second reading today winds into and connects with this one because it's another story about widows. It takes us further back in time to Ruth and her widowed mother-in-law, Naomi. I'm sure most of you have heard the famous lines, the most famous verses from this book. Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do thus and so to me, and more as well, if even death parts me from you. Such a beautiful statement of commitment. Many of us have heard it read at weddings, but the original setting was not between marriage partners. It was spoken by a daughter-in-law to her mother-in-law after both had been widowed. It happened like this. Once upon a time, there was famine in the land. Things got so bad that a certain man named Elimelech left his hometown of Bethlehem, the town whose name means house of bread. He and his wife Naomi and their two sons left Judah altogether and went across to the land of Moab, although the Moabites and the Judahites had been enemies for generations. Still, they settled there. Soon Elimelech died. He died, leaving Naomi with her two sons, each of whom married a Moabite woman. After 10 years in the land of Moab, and with no grandchildren in the family, both of the sons died. The three women, Naomi and her two daughters-in-law, were left with no economic safety net. At that same time, Naomi got word that the famine had lifted in the land of Judah, and so she decided to go back. Back where Elimelech's land still was. She offered her daughters-in-law a blessing and encouraged them to go back to the homes of their mothers. They didn't want to, and so she argued with them. With humor, I'm an old woman. Even if I were to have a husband tonight, I can't have a son for you. You're not going to wait around till they grow up. They wept together, and one daughter-in-law, Orpah, turned back. But Ruth, entreat me not to leave you, she said, or to return from following after you. She leaned into her vulnerability and bravely staked her life on her steadfast love for Naomi. So the two widowed women traveled back to the land of Naomi's ancestors, leaving the land of Ruth's ancestors behind forever. When they got there, they discovered that the famine in the land was indeed over, and the barley was being harvested. According to the law, each landowner must leave the corners of every field unharvested, and whatever was dropped should be left where it fell. When it came to harvest grapes, they were to leave some on the vine, and when they harvested olives, they were allowed to shake the tree only one time. All the olives that stayed there for the next shaking were to go to the widows and the orphans and the strangers who were allowed to glean in the land. So Ruth went down to the fields and began to follow the harvesters, gleaning on land owned by Boaz, a kinsman of Naomi's. He'd heard about her, of course. Everyone had heard about this Moabite woman who remained faithful to her late husband's mother. And now he caught her eye, and she caught his eye, with her beauty and her hard work and her steadfastness. He looked out for her. He gave the men harvesting in front of her word to leave a little extra, to drop a little more, and to not touch her. Which brings us out of the story and reminds us that she was a single woman, unprotected and vulnerable. She'd risked everything to leave Moab. She risked her personal safety to go to the fields and provide for herself and for her mother-in-law. Now, Boaz was a particular kind of kinsman, a goel, one word that means a person who fulfills family obligations to a relative in need. Well, that's a mouthful, so they just said goel. But he was indeed a kinsman who fulfills family obligation to a relative in need, and he was kind to Ruth. This attracted Naomi's attention. The story continues in today's lectionary reading. Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, I need to seek some security for you, so that it may be well with you. Now, here is our kinsman Boaz, with whose young women you have been working. See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Now, wash and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." Ruth said to her, "All that you tell me, I will do." Then there is a good bit left out about what happens between the two of them on the threshing floor when Boaz wakes in the night and finds her there. But it's important to note that Ruth obeys Naomi, but not entirely. She does more than Naomi asks. She takes the initiative, and in response, Boaz names her a woman of valor. He remarks on her courage and her place, even though she is widowed and foreign and poor. And he promises to sell Naomi's property for her and to redeem Ruth from her widowhood. Our text also leaves out the slightly boring bits where Boaz does business with a kinsman who has a stronger claim on Naomi's property. You can read it if you want. And the text picks up. "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When they came together, the Lord made her conceive, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, 'Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without next of kin, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has borne him.' Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her own bosom and became his nurse. The women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, A son has been born to Naomi. They named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse, the father of David. Ruth's courage saved Naomi. Ruth's courage gave her and Boaz a line of inheritance, the line of the great king, David. Now, we can read this text as a story that is bound by its culture. And in that way, Naomi and Ruth are victims of a patriarchal system that reduces them to their beauty and their ability to bear children. They're victims of circumstances, and they cannot take complete control of their own lives. Even their reward is for Ruth to give birth. This is true, but within the confines of that culture and that time, they are remarkable women who, out of their vulnerability, take initiative, risk, and care for one another. They become an intertwined, inseparable pair, and they are given new life and security. They are richly blessed, and Ruth does indeed become the grandmother to the greatest king in Israel's history. The widow in the temple and the widows who traveled from Moab to Bethlehem remind us that we need to step into our vulnerability with courage, to participate in the steadfast loving kindness of God. We must be brave, because it is that steadfast kindness that is keeping the world together. May we be blessed with the courage to embrace our vulnerability and step out in love.
Listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to you.